Good morning, Utah. Good morning to the people of the great state of Utah. This is the Planetary Status Report. Your good friend Dan, talking from an undisclosed location in the state of Utah. If you are listening on a shortwave radio, there's a good chance that it is either Saturday or Sunday night or morning, depending upon where you are. If you are listening on a shortwave radio, you might be tuned in to 5950 kHz WRMI out of Miami. And if you are listening on a shortwave radio, the notes for this particular broadcast can be found at dfgtc.org/shownotes. That is DFGTC, D as in dog, dfgtc.org/shownotes. And there will be the notes for all the broadcast shows. And if you're interested in listening to all the podcasts that might be broadcast but don't end up as broadcast because perhaps your good friend Dan used a lot of bad language in some of those old podcasts. But if you're interested in other listening from your friend Dan, you can go to iamsully.com. That's right, iamsully.com. And if you're interested in other stuff related to me, stuff I'm working on, and activities of some of my friends, you can go to igluluau.com. That is igloo, as in a little ice cabin you live in, and luau, as in barbecue you have with your Polynesian friends, igluluau.com. And it is Monday. As of right now, it is actually 9:40 a.m., Monday morning, Utah time. Mountain Standard Time. And if you're interested in donating to this broadcast, you can go to PayPal and just search for Dr. Freckles, spelled Dr. and Freckles completely, not the short DR. Or you can go to www.paypal.com/paypalme/Dr. Freckles, DOCTORFRECKLES. Not phonetically spelled, though. I should have done that phonetically, like Delta Oscar, Charlie Tango, Oscar Romeo, Foxtrot, Foxtrot Romeo, Echo Charlie, Kilo Lima, Echo Sierra. That's Freckles to you and me, buddy. If you want to donate, you don't have to. You should take care of your food, your water, your shelter first. You should take care of the people you care about. And if you've done all those things and you still have piles of gold and diamonds left over from the diamond mines you found in southern Utah, well then take those diamonds and put them into a box. And you can send them to me on the super light rail. I'll be ready, man. I'll be there to pick up if you're out there. Interesting side note, this is the first podcast I'm doing from Utah. Until recently, my podcast was described as the Little Saigon Report, but as of right now, it is the Planetary Status Report. Now, you're probably thinking, Dan, that's really ostentatious and stuck up. What are you, some kind of Mr. Fancy Pants? You think it's your job to report on the status of the planet? Well, I don't know. I don't know who's going to do it. Do you expect the Pope to do it? Do you expect the Pope to report to you on the status of planet Earth? Do you think Pope Francis will tell you the truth about what's going on in the Great Salt Lake? Do you? Thank you. Do you expect the people to tell you the truth? Do you expect them to be honest about what's happening? I don't know. But yeah, this is my first podcast from Utah. I'm a little bit out of it in good ways, pretty much mostly good ways. And any bad ways are just related to moving is weird. No matter who you are, moving around is strange. I have come to realize in recent years that my life is a bit like, I guess you'd say, Yasser Arafat back in the 1970s. I don't know that I want to live this way as much as it's just the way that we end up living. And it's not necessarily good or bad, but when you become unstuck in the context of human community and you find yourself wandering about like a hobo, maybe not like a railroad hobo, because that's hardcore. Railroad hobos have to fight to the death. Railroad hobos have to, you know, eat raw rattlesnake blood. Railroad hobos have to be able to turn a stick into a shiv and then shove it through your heart. Railroad hobos carry the weight of the world on their shoulders. They are chased by the dogs of the night. Railroad hobos, they're out there right now looking for a beer. This is my first podcast, and if you're listening on shortwave on WRMI 5950 kilohertz, this is technically the first recorded broadcast I have done from Utah. Yes, today is Monday, but who knows what time it is on the shortwave. These radio waves can bounce around forever. In fact, they might be bouncing around inside of the great ceiling of the earth, the great cavernous ceiling cover, the ionospheric rooftop. They can bounce around and around and around and around these shortwave signals. You can get a one hop, two hop, three hop. Somebody in Antarctica, France could be picking me up. And you say, well, what's Antarctica, France? Oh, if you don't know, you haven't been on shortwave. Yes, if you are listening on shortwave, you can get the notes for this particular podcast broadcast at dfgtc.org. That is Delta, Foxtrot, Golf, Tango, Charlie.org, dfgtc.org/show notes. But anywho, so I guess I'm a little nervous, I'm a little confused, I'm trying to understand where I'm at, I'm a little disconnected. I'm really happy about Utah, you know, seriously, so far, I feel like I'm detoxing from evil a little. I'm not saying there aren't bad things and bad people in Utah, but by comparison, I feel like I have evil coming out of my pores because I'm balancing out. And it's a bit fearful because I don't want to take the darkness of Seattle to Utah. But then I was told about Salt Lake City, so I don't feel so bad. I don't feel so bad now that I know the truth of Salt Lake City. Now that I know that there were once 18 tribes that guarded the sacred order. Now that I know that there were 41 knights covered in drinker's blood. Now that I know that there were carriers of the bats and the weasel angels, and there were horses that had flames coming out of their nostrils, it was quite terrible. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. Teaching, explaining to others in such a way that they understand your joy. Now you say, well, what does Dr. Freckles mean, Mr. Fancy Pants, who now lives in Utah at an undisclosed underground location surrounded by robots programmed to destroy? What does that quote from Dr. Freckles mean? Teaching is explaining to others in such a way that they understand your joy. That's what teaching is. Now, what that means is the following. A student can tell if a teacher hates their job. Newsflash. A student can tell if the instructor or the tutor or the teacher hates their job. A student can tell if a teacher is simply going through their motions. And I don't want to get caught up over public school, private school, homeschool. I'm a voluntarist / anarchist / believer in liberty. I think you should educate your kids the way that you feel fit according to your philosophy. When I talk of teacher, I am using the term generically. Imagine you are walking the desert of your bleak life. You're out in that desert being chased by the wonder wolves and the cowboy snakes, and you didn't know what to do next. And you run into some very brave, very wise, you know, Native American shaman or something. And you're out of water and out of breath and almost dead. And the shaman takes you to his home. He has a cave in the mountainside. He's living there. Inside the cave, the shaman, you know, gives you water and food and psychedelic peyote. So you're in the cave with this Native American, and he's a teacher and he's a shaman, but all of a sudden you find out that he's giving you a presentation on timeshares. Because for some strange reason, this cave has broadband. For some strange reason, this cave has electricity, and he's handing you a drink, a custom drink. You get at least one, and you just have to sit through his presentation on these caves, these cave sharing. But the thing is, you can tell at that point that this particular wise shaman, this brilliant inspector of the universe, hates his job. This person doesn't want to be here, okay? They don't want to tell you about timeshares. This guy wants to take you on a spirit journey. He wants to take you to the other side of the mountain. He wants to teach you about the great spirit and your place in it. He doesn't want to sell you a timeshare. You can judge a teacher. You can judge an instructor. You can determine the quality of the person telling you something in part, not toto, but in part based upon joy. If they love doing what they're doing, they will probably be pretty good at teaching you about it. They will. Not always. Some people are like Gollum from, you know, The Lord of the Rings. You know, it's my precious. It's my precious. Listen, I worked at Microsoft as a contractor. Pretty much every blue badge at Microsoft, it's their precious, okay? Whatever it is. These days, it's the secret mojo that allows you to use the Azure cloud without the cloud blowing up on you. That's currently the secret sauce that the blue badges in Redmond keep very special to themselves because it's their precious. But other than sociopaths and people that have issues, you know, with rocks in their heads, ordinary, decent people like us, I think when we love something, we exhibit joy, and you can tell when we're talking about it. And that is also a form of teaching. I mention this because in the last few days, I've met some new people. I've gotten to know one person in particular. I'm going to keep his private life to himself, but this particular person loves shortwave. And I really didn't know anything about shortwave but the basics before the last few weeks. It's not that it was beyond the ken of my technical understanding. I just didn't really give it any mind. I didn't pay it any mind. And, you know, it's funny because when you look at what's going on in the world right now, it seems like shortwave might be exactly where a lot of people should be. But, yeah, they're not. But in listening to this friend, this new friend, talk about something that he loves, I was also learning. You see, when people hate something, they just don't do a great job explaining, and they tend to just gloss over things because they don't care. They don't care that they succeed. They don't care if you succeed. But when people love something, whether it's computer programming, writing music, writing literature, painting, sculpting, it doesn't matter what it is. When somebody loves something, you can tell. Ayn Rand talks about this to some extent in both The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And in many cases, interactions between characters were in part about how much somebody loved something, even basic, even something as simple as running the train, quote unquote, okay, or selling newspapers, quote unquote, or being the one reliable administrator in a railroad company in whatever role. Dagny Taggart at Taggart Transcontinental, she didn't want to sit down with somebody because they had authority, but she loved to sit down with people because they loved their job, because they loved what they're doing, because they didn't feel like slaves. Slaves are not teachers, and teachers are not people that really, you know, can or should work with slaves. Slaves require slave masters, and slaves are not teachers. We should not be slaves, nor should we be slave masters. And it doesn't mean we're always going to be teachers for each other. That's not the case. But actually, in the world of liberty, we often end up teaching each other for free. That's our part of our philosophy, you know? It's part of our core philosophy. In fact, one of the most damaging forces in the liberty movement in the last 20 or 30 years has been the intellectual property crapola. You know, we can't share ideas because first I have to call my lawyer. First, I have to call my lawyer, and then we can have a conversation about the nature of reality. What kind of crap is that? It's not the only reason we have problems today, but this is one of the reasons, guys. You know, it is true, you know, that you should and you must own your work. But when it comes to the works of the mind, we get far more advantage in sharing than not. We really do. You could sit on every idea and pretend that you're the only person that would ever have any idea. That is perfectly within your rights. You can sit on a mountain of things that will never happen. Or you can teach. You can build a library of papers that never get published. You can record a podcast and bury it in the ground. Or you can teach. You can go around scaring people. You can scare them and yell at them and make fun of them, or you can figure out a way to fall in love with your life, and you can teach. Next topic, because man, oh man, it's Monday, and I have to admit, I'm still working through this whole thing. I'm not in Seattle any longer, but I still carry some of the demons around inside my skull. People here are really nice. but my brain is still kind of rejecting that paradigm. Like, there's no way people can be nice. I had a conversation today with a gentleman. He was wearing a mask and I didn't have one. He didn't yell at me. He basically said he just got used to this nonsense. And a lot of people have gotten used to this nonsense. But yeah, anywho, next topic. And this next one's a bit weird because, given that you may or may not be hearing this over the radio and or downloaded as an MP3 and or streamed, this next quote from Dr. Freckles might not make a lot of sense or could even seem like hypocrisy. But I'd like to quote Dr. Freckles and then we can talk through it, okay? Okay. This is a quote from Dr. Freckles. Life is not lived connected to machines. Life is not lived connected to machines. It is lived connected to people. Life is not lived connected to machines. What does Dan mean while he's playing on a Roland electronic keyboard, talking to a Zoom recorder, which he will then take and edit in Audacity, probably add a screen cover for YouTube, prep and edit for WRMI in Miami on 5950 kilohertz, Saturday and Sunday, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 a.m. UTC. What is Dan saying when he says life is not lived connected to machines, it is lived connected to people? Well, let me explain without it sounding like hypocrisy. I have worked in technology for about 20 years, okay? Some of those were really great years, some of them weren't so great. And at first, I was very optimistic about my career and about the future of technology in people's lives. I was, in the early 2000s, kind of like hopeful, Not, I don't think I was too naive, but I guess I was a little naive. And then the years went by, and after many years and ultimately ending up in Seattle a couple times, twice again, and working at places like Microsoft on contract, I've changed my perspective. And also, I would say I've changed my perspective as I've seen how people interact with quote unquote smart devices. I know we call them smart devices, but are we aware that they might be making us dumber? I know that that sounds insane, but I actually think that these smart devices are impacting our ability to reason about the world. And I would even say that explains some of what happened in 2020 with the COVID, with the Rona. People have come to see the smart device almost in a way similar to how the ape people, ape men of 2001: A Space Odyssey interact with the obelisk, the monolith. Staring at it gormlessly, staring at this black rectangle, electric and glorified, staring at this thing that was left by some advanced race. And again, the smart device is not that, but watching people walking around with their little glowing rectangles, it seems like they're, just like those ape people staring at the monolith in 2001: A Space Odyssey. And if you haven't seen it, that's a Kubrick film. Kubrick, Stanley Kubrick, famous films like Clockwork Orange, the Shining. He's had a few. We as human beings, and we're not alone, there are other creatures that do this. We as human beings often take advantage of our ability to reason about the world, and we use tools. TOOLS. LS, tools. We use tools to communicate, like shortwave radio, for example. It's a tool. We use other instruments, like electronic keyboards, to create music. And yes, that's a tool too. Its purpose is not as practical as a radio or a hammer, but it still has a purpose. And if you consider the nature of the human psyche, the keyboard, the piano, and the hammer, although very different, should have a kind of equal weight to some extent because we do need to navigate the darkness of our psyche. And music and art, these are ways of doing this. So these are tools too, but they have a purpose. But then there are tools that start using us. There are tools that start telling us where to go. There are tools that tell us we can eat or we can't eat. There are tools that tell us that we're healthy or we're not healthy, and then automatically email our insurance company. There are tools that will be used to track whether or not we had a vaccination. And I can only assume that if the tool thinks that we did not get our proper vaccination this week, that the tool will notify somebody and, you know, somebody shows up to give you your vaccine. There are tools we use, and there are tools that use us. And I don't want to spend all podcast on the subject, but I think it is worth considering this, considering the fact that, you know, the more time we stay connected to tools and machines and electronics, the less time we're connected to other people, I think the worse off for humanity. Because there are just so many things that these tools can't do. There are so many aspects of our life that they cannot simulate. And if you want to say, well, one day there'll be a robot that's exactly like a person, does everything a person does, fine. I don't think that's going to happen. I really don't. I think that there are many issues with that particular event, not least of which, I think a lot of artificial intelligence is overhyped. Yes, there are brilliant solutions being developed utilizing computerization. This is a true statement. Mathematical reasoning, computer-based reasoning, synthetic reasoning has progressed a great deal in recent decades. But there's more to the human brain than just calculation. There's consciousness, there's awareness. And you may think these are just simple, fuzzy things that can't possibly be thought of in rational terms, ergo, like B.F. Skinner, we should disregard them. We do so at our own peril. We do so to the extent that we want to damage our own hearts and our own minds. We do so to the extent that we want to damage human community. We should use tools. We should use cameras to take pictures of our friends at weddings. We should use computers to write our novels and our plays and to make our movies. We should use the internet to send email and communicate and see a picture of old Aunt Grumbly's potato garden. We should do all these things. But I don't want the computer to tell me to start building a potato garden. I don't want my phone to call me up and say I'm late for work. I don't want my toilet commenting on my diet. I, like the octopus, like the raven, like the chimpanzee, and a number of other creatures, I am a tool user. I want to use tools to solve problems. I have no problem being the smart raven that picks up the stick to pick the lock. And things like that do happen. Ravens are very intelligent. But I don't want to live in a world where the stick tells the raven, pick me up and pick the lock. You know? Do what I tell you. It's time to wake up, Raven. That's not the world we should be living in, but that's the human world we're engineering. And we don't fit into it. And it's possible that the global concern, the pandemic, it's possible that this is mainly about getting people used to a total control society. I don't know, folks. Some moments I wake up and I listen to the news and I see the news on Zero Hedge or someplace, and I just say all they're doing is just filling an ocean with fear. To this moment, to this day, especially in Utah, I do not see anything that remotely looks like a pandemic plague scenario that would justify what's happened. Let me repeat that statement. Based on what I've seen as a human being since January of 2020, I have seen zero evidence of anything that looks like a plague or a pandemic. I've said this before, I'll say it again. Nurses are not dancing in their off time during plagues and pandemics. Their smocks and their uniforms are covered in viscera. They get dumped. They pass out. There's not enough nurses. They go back to their shift. That's reality. During a plague and a pandemic, you run out of nurses really, really fast. And I don't care how many masks they wear. That's reality. There are no dancing nurses in pandemics and plagues that are real. Another reason why, you don't need to market a plague. You don't need to tell people that a plague is dangerous. Actual plagues, actual pandemics, actual epidemics are obviously dangerous if they demand that we shut everything down. But we shut everything down because the tools, and I include some people in this, the tools, I'm just going to drink a little coffee here. The tools, T-O-O-L-S, both people and machines, told you to stop, told you to move, told you to put on your mask, and even might tell you to put on two masks. I read today the tools, they don't want you to have certain type of masks on airplanes that would actually be healthy. Listen to this. I read an article today, and you can research this yourself. Go find your own link to this. But I read an article today that Delta Airlines was... was demanding that, was basically saying you cannot use a mask with an exhaust valve. You cannot use a mask designed to filter the air properly in a healthy way. Those masks are designed to filter the air in a healthy way. According to Delta Airlines, you have to just, you know, obstruct your airway. Put on that cotton, crappy paper toxic mask that you got from who knows where that's covered in who knows what. But don't you dare use an actual mask that would actually work and actually be healthy. And that wouldn't be poisonous. Don't do that if you want to fly Delta Airlines. It's crazy. It drives people crazy. It drives people insane. It melts your brain. I don't have an easy answer. I don't even know where to begin. It's crazy. Next topic. And if you're listening, if you just tuned into this off of shortwave, this is WRMI 5950 kilohertz, and it should be sometime between 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. UTC or 11 p.m. and midnight Eastern Standard Time, somewhere in there. Maybe it's around 11:33, and we all know what happens at 11:33 Eastern Standard Time in the great state of Florida. That's when the Okeechobee monster rises out of the swamps and stares up at the sky. The Okeechobee monster is a giant salamander that didn't die. There were catastrophes and floods and fires. There were rocks that fell from the sky. Yes, next topic is black market guns. Let's talk about gun control rationally. Let's not worry so much about your own feelings about weapons, because I, for one, would prefer to live in a world where people could just deal with each other without violence. That's my perspective. And that includes police officers. So if you're an anti-gun person, at least be consistent. Nobody should have guns. That is the only consistent anti-gun position, is no one. If you're an anti-gun person, but your position is, well, some people need guns, like the soldiers. Yeah, what are the soldiers doing with those guns? Do you know? Do you pay attention? Other than paying taxes and watching commercials during the Super Bowl, do you actually know where those bullets are going? Because if you don't, that basically means you're funding people to go out and just raise mayhem. That's the position of thinking that, yes, only the soldiers should have guns. Another position is, well, no, Dan, no, I don't want any soldiers to have guns. I want only the cops to have guns. Well, okay, but the cops shoot a lot of people, buddy. Look at the numbers. The cops are not necessarily all that well balanced, buddy. And I don't know how to put this, but the laws that exist right now, they're not really just laws, and we don't really live in a rule of law system any longer, pal. So if you tell me that only the cops should have guns, I also don't believe that's a consistent position. It is not. But you can have it if you want to. Here's the reality about gun control is that if you ban guns, the very next day there will be more people in the black market making guns, and they will not have building permits. They will not have ad campaigns. They won't be glad handing or shaking hands with politicians. In the black market, you just get down to business, buddy. Okay? If they decide that they really do want to go hardcore on, well, we'll just bump up the insurance rates and we'll make it impossible to buy ammo. Okay, buddy, you go ahead and do that. But here's the deal. The very next day, the black market will be making ammo. And they will be doing it out of their basements and out of barns. They'll be doing it in caves. They'll be doing it in trailers. They'll be doing it everywhere. And they'll be doing it while they're doing it in some cases. If you make it impossible for people to do something, they will find another way to do it. If you make it impossible for a person to drink clean water, they'll buy a water filter. If you make it impossible for a person to, purchase marijuana, they'll just buy it on the black market or grow it. If you outlaw the guns and the ammo, if you say, well, we'll outlaw the barrels, we'll outlaw the metals, you could even go further. Let's say we're just going to outlaw math and science and engineering, which I gotta say, based upon asking questions to some of the youth these days who are products of engineering schools, they're almost there. They're almost there. Just by turning universities into political cesspits that contain nothing useful, they've more or less hobbled a couple generations of engineers. So, you know what? They're almost there. But if you were to say to me, well, Dan, they're going to ban this and they're going to ban that, my only answer is, so what? So what? I gave up on them and your rationalizations in 2016. By the way, a lot of people gave up on them last year. Your rationalizations about public schools. Oh, we got to have public schools. Really? Where were these teachers and these public schools when their students needed the truth? Where were these teachers and public schools when their students were being exposed to institutional child abuse? Because that's what it is. That's what this mass dystopia is. In addition to being crap, in addition to being completely unhealthy for anybody, in addition to being an insult upon human communication and human society, it is also the largest example of institutionalized child abuse in, I don't know, several thousand years. Where were you teachers who were supposed to be so important to the fabric of society when the kids needed you? You claimed, don't come here, parent. Don't be part of the public school. We don't need you. We don't want to hear you. Where were you? Teacher, where were you? So you can tell me about the banning of guns all you want to. For people like me, we have thrown away your public schools and your hospitals and your roads, and frankly, most of us are very close to throwing away your internet until we can come up with something better. We are tired of your tyranny, we are tired of your lies, and we're tired of the fact that you actually have the delusion that you think you control the world, and we don't need to spend any more time on you. Ban the guns if you want to. Here's a little story from the future. Imagine yourself someplace in a city in 2025. you're in a city in 2025 and you're current, you know, you're walking down the street and you see some dude, and this dude is carrying a box. And a cop comes by and grabs the dude by his arm and he says, "What's in your box, buddy?" And the dude looks at the cop and he says, "I'm selling custom earrings, pal." And so the guy opens up the box. And inside the box, there's triggers for AR submachine guns or machine gun assault rifles, whatever, all kinds of triggers. Little triggers, little half moon triggers, milled for 9mm, milled for shotgun, milled for rifle. The cop looks at them. He's a little puzzled. And the buddy just looks at the cop and says, "Man, copper, these are just earrings, buddy. These are just custom-made earrings for women, emo women, goth women who are totally into those little half moon metal things they stick in their earrings, buddy." And the cop listens and he shakes his head and you can see a tear rolling down his cheek and maybe even a little bit of pee on his pants, and you could tell his world was changed, and he walks away. He turns around in shame because that cop can't figure out a reason to arrest somebody for selling earrings. Almost every component of a modern rifle can be called something else. The triggers, they can be called earrings, but you use your own, you know, you use your own process there, pal, out there in internet world land, out there in shortwave land. Whatever rationalization makes sense for you to proxy in front of the concept of a trigger for a carbine, for a rifle, you make your own determination, my friend. But just about every single component, in fact, I'm going to restate this. Every single component of a rifle could be renamed and called something else. You could sell the bolts as custom artisanal heavy steel ballpoint pens. These are ballpoint pens. These are fancy. All the hipsters of Seattle love these ballpoint pens. These ballpoint pens fit best with 7.62 millimeter and 5.56. You know what I mean, though? 9mm, 38, whatever. I need some more water, coffee. It's drier in Utah than I'm used to, but I'm getting used to it, and I think that Utah's getting used to me, and that's okay. Every single component could be called something else. You could call the lower assembly of an AR-style carbine a portable MP3 player housing. You could call the barrel a specialized column for water purification. You could call the silencer or the suppressor, you could call that a fuel filter. I've seen that one before, haven't you? And I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but the thing about cracking down on people doing black market activities is that if you're reasonably intelligent about it, like let's say you're organizing a sale for a rifle, one rifle, and you source that final sale because that's your role in the supply chain. You're the salesman. You source the parts for that sale from maybe 5 or 10 or 30 different manufacturers, all of whom might be moving their locations every single day. You might source parts from different manufacturers, utilizing encryption, utilizing not just the dark web, but potentially utilizing shortwave radio. You might communicate and organize yourself in such a way, in such an intelligent way, that the only moment that rifle exists is the 10 minutes after you got all the parts, you put it together, you test fired it, and the sale. In theory, you could complete that sale in 5 minutes. 5 minutes, you could test fire, put it together, test fire it, and sell it. And if the cop doesn't arrest you in those 5 minutes, what does he really have? What does she really have? Really? A bunch of earrings? Some ballpoint pens? Perhaps a fuel filter or a water column for a high, you know, a very expensive water purification system using spin hydro technology. That's why it's rifled. People see, and they do see what they want to see. I'm not saying all people all the time, but this includes me as well. Part of the way of fooling people, part of the methodology of convincing people of something that isn't true is finding out what people want. What do they want to hear? That'll tell you everything. Next topic. Another quote from Dr. Freckles, Marxism, the poor man's Scientology. Marxism, the poor man's Scientology. What do I mean by that? Well, I think that both Scientology and Marxism prey on the same things, and that is basically a group of people that have been really beat down by society. And they also do something similar in another sense. I think a lot of families who are Marxist families or Scientology families tend to keep the indoctrination in the system. They don't really say, well, go off and find your own way. No, it's like, hey, kiddo, here's Das Kapital, here's some L. Ron Hubbard. And I wouldn't even be surprised. In fact, it would not shock me if there weren't some Marxists who are also Scientologists. I mean, it sounds crazy, Dan, but is it really? Because, I mean, when it comes to cultic, you know, pyramid schemes, the details are really kind of irrelevant. You end up in the same place. You end up in a place where a small minority of people tell you how to live, and they give you completely preposterous, completely absurd reasons around it. Like, well, you know, if you're going to go to the grocery store, you have to walk on an arrow going a certain direction. You do realize that capitalism is doomed to destroy the lower class. Listen, if you put your hands on these metal things, I can read you with the e-meter. I can read you with the e-meter and tell you whether or not you're a capitalist running dog. I can read you with the e-meter and tell you or not whether you're bourgeois trash. I can tell you with the e-meter. Anyways, I don't want to beat up on Scientology too much, although I love beating up on Scientology and Marxism. And if you're a Marxist, a Scientologist, or both, good luck. Last topic for today, before I close out this podcast, and again, this is a podcast, but it could also end up being a broadcast on WRMI, 5950 kilohertz, okay, Saturday and Sunday night, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 a.m. UTC, if you're listening to this. I'm trying to keep these to about an hour now. Some of them used to go longer. So last topic, things I've learned so far in Utah. I've only been here a few days, but I've learned a few things. Let me talk about the stuff I've learned in Utah. There is an animal that lives in the Great Salt Lake. It is a screech beast. It is covered in thorns. Its eyes glow red. Some believe it is the great salamander king. Some believe it's the red lobster. Some believe it is a brine shrimp that was exposed to atomic weapons in 1958, Bo Blimp Doc. This great screech animal, no one talks about it, is a secret that the Mormon Church keeps. It is one of their closest kept secrets. They won't even discuss it. And there's reason to believe that this great beast might soon rise out of Salt Lake to take its vengeance upon the people of Salt Lake City. So if some late night you're listening to shortwave and I'm talking about the screech beast and you hear a great howl, it'll sound like a French bulldog on steroids. That'll be the great screech beast. It'll be crawling, slimy, all glumuli out of the sea, out of the salt lake, covered in spunctus grease, covered in the pain, covered in the lies of a century of deception. Something I learned in Utah so far. Next thing I learned in Utah, the next thing I learned in the short time I've been in Utah, is that there are roving gangs of Mormons now moving from hotel to hotel. You can't find a hotel room. There's no way to find one. You cannot find a hotel room because there are gangs of Mormons moving around Utah. These Mormons are armed with bats and bags full with D-cell batteries. They're dressed nice. They're dressed the way they're supposed to. You know, the young men, you know, are dressed as, you know, elder missionaries. They've got their plastic, you know, they got their name tag. But they are out there wandering in the night with dogs on chains. They are out there with you know, probably old rusty knives and spears covered in the lost memories of a youth no longer existing. There are roving gangs of Mormons going through all the hotels and towns right now. You cannot find a hotel room in Utah. It's all occupied. Another thing I learned in Utah is all the beer is 5% here. In fact, the beer is so weak in Utah that I'll have to work really hard if I do want to become a dirty old Irish alcoholic. In Utah, the people changed the road signs. They messed with the road signs. We were driving in Utah and they told us our destination was 45 miles away. Then it was 20 miles away. Then it was 56 miles away. We didn't change direction. All in the same sequence. This is also a part of Utah. There are no services in Utah. Wherever you go in Utah on a highway, every sign, pretty much every sign, almost every sign says there are no services. Do you know why, Bo Blimtok? Because many of the towns in Utah have been taken over by cybernetic robot beasts from the Mormon church. They look like normal Mormons. They act like normal Mormons. But if you push one over and they fall on the ground, you can see their skull cap crack open, and inside are the wires and the sparks and the badly soldered circuit boards. There are no services there. They don't need food. They don't need water. They don't need hotels. They're always awake and they're always on the job. There are no services in Utah. That's something else I learned. In the hinterlands, places like where I'm living, which I won't reveal because I'm trying to protect my kind hosts and their awesome people, in the hinterlands, people are rejecting the COVID. In all seriousness, this is awesome. I think this is happening in a lot of places that aren't, you know, crappy cities like, you know, Seattle. But other places other than Seattle or San Francisco or New York City or whatever, people are starting or trying to, or maybe always did, behave like human beings, and this is a blessed thing. God bless. Another thing I learned in Utah, the people of Salt Lake City are haughty and prideful. This is well known. Another thing I learned in Utah is about the famous lobster letter, the red lobster letter. The red lobster letter that Joe Smith came across in Maine in the 1820s when he was visiting friends. The red lobster letter that told them there were diamonds in Utah, the great King Solomon diamond mines and ruby mines and emerald mines were in Utah. The lobster told him. The red lobster. That's another thing I learned about Utah. In Utah, you are allowed to carry a laser cannon and a missile launcher. In Utah, you are allowed to pack a 6-barrel Vulcan cannon or a flamethrower. In Utah, you can do whatever you want to do, but after every street battle, you have to say please and thank you. Before you fire your gun, you should say please, and after you are hit and wounded, you must say thank you. If you were involved in a Mormon street battle in SLC, because all the tribes of Salt Lake City are now battling for total control. If you are involved in a street battle between the various Treble Trek tribes of the inner sanctum of the outer core of the LDS, make sure that before you are shot, you say please. And after you are wounded, you say thank you. This is also true of Utah. And, you know, before I close out, I just want to just say to all my friends out there that I did make it. I am here. I don't want to give out too much information about my hosts, but I just have to say this. These are really good people. I don't know what would have happened to me if I hadn't have run into these folks. I don't know what would have happened to me if my good friend Jim had not made an issue of pushing it, because I've kind of had some bad experiences. In 2016, I had some really bad experiences. I don't want to go into them, but they involved, you know, a person and people I hope I never meet again. In fact, I met Jim after those experiences, and I think that made, you know, that made it more difficult to meet Jim, you know, even though he's a really cool dude. Needless to say, the folks, the people that I am living with right now, these folks, they're good people. They have a good heart. They have a desire to live in a world like the one I want to live in, where good people are left alone, where good people try as best they can to help each other. Nobody's perfect. The world is not perfect. We're all not going to live forever. But there's no reason why we can't live in peace with each other. There is no reason why we can't be free. That's all. We can. Okay, no one has to give you permission for your freedom. There is no piece of paper you fill out. When you were born free. It took a government to take that away from you. It took a government to tell you are not free, that you have no identity, that you're just a machine, that you're just a tool. But you're not just a tool, though, are you? You have a heart, you have a soul, you have a mind. You're not just a tool. So to the people of Texas, the people of Hawaii, to the people of New York City, to the people of Los Angeles, Hawaii, I already said that, to the people of Thailand and Taiwan, to the people of Madagascar, to the people all across the world who might be picking this up on shortwave, WRMI, 5950 kilohertz out of Miami, Okeechobee, the great Okeechobee beast. For all my brothers and sisters out there who might be listening on shortwave or downloading via the podcast world, keep yourself safe from the swamp beasts of tomorrow. Stay away from the Great Salt Lake. Keep yourself safe from the monsters of the sea. Stay away from the Great Salt Lake. This creature is coming for you and coming for me. Have a great rest of your Monday and or Saturday and or Sunday.